Yamunagiri-vardhari Yamunati-ravana-chari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari
Parivraj Kacharya Shtotar Shat Shri Shrimad His Divine Grace Abhay Charanarvind Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shla Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnav Vrind Ki Granthraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Kantra Shrimad Bhagavatam Canto 11 Chapter 20, Pure Devotional Service Surpasses Knowledge and Detachment. Text 30. Vidyate Hridaya Granthesh Hridaya Granthesh Chidyante Sarva Samshayah Kshiyante Chasya Karmani Mai drushte akhilatmani Vidyate hridaya granthesh Chidyante sarva samshayah Kshiyante chasya karmani Mai drushte akhilatmani Chidyante sarva samshayah Chidyante chasya karmani Mai drishte akhilatmani Chidyante hridaya granthis Chidyante sarva samshayah Chasya sarmani Mai drishte akhilatmani Chidyate hridaya granthis Chidyante sarva samshayah Chidyante chasya karmani Mai drishte akhilatmani Vaishnavis Chidyate hridaya granthis Chidyante sarva samshayah
Chidyante
karmani Mai drishte akhilatmani Karmani Mai drishte akhilatmani Chidyante hridaya granthis निधन्ते सर्व संशयः वर्ड फॉर वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन विद्यते पियर्स्ड हृदय हार्ट ग्रंथि नॉट्स छिद्यन्ते कट टू पीसेस सर्व ऑल संशयः मिसगिविंग्स क्षीयन्ते टर्मिनेटेड च एंड अस्य हिज कर्मणि चेन ऑफ फ्रूटिव एक्शंस मई व्हेन आई दृष्टे एम सीन अखिलात्मनि एज द सुप्रीम पर्सनैलिटी ऑफ गॉडहेड. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Translation, the knot in the heart is pierced, all misgivings are cut to pieces, and the chain of fruitive actions is terminated when I am seen as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport, Hrudaya Granthi indicates that one's heart is bound to illusion by false identification with the material body. One thus becomes absorbed in material sex pleasure, dreaming of innumerable combinations of male and female bodies. A person intoxicated by sex attraction cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the reservoir of all pleasure and the supreme enjoyer. When a devotee achieves steadiness in devotional service, feeling transcendental pleasure at every moment in the execution of his loving service to the Lord, the knot of false identification is pierced and all his misgivings are cut to pieces. In illusion, we imagine that the living entity cannot be fully satisfied without material sense gratification and speculative doubting of the absolute truth. Materialistic persons consider sense enjoyment and speculative doubting to be essential for civilized life. A pure devotee, however, realizes that Lord Krishna is an unlimited ocean of happiness and the personification of all knowledge. The realization of Lord Krishna completely eradicates the twin tendencies of sense gratification and mental speculation. Thus, the chain of fruitive activities or karma automatically collapses, just as fire collapses and goes out when its fuel is removed. Advanced devotional service automatically awards one liberation from material bondage, as confirmed by Lord Kapila. Charayatyashuya kosham nigirnam analoyatha bhakti. Devotional service dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort, just as fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-33. Srila Prabhupada states in his purport to this verse, a devotee does not have to try to separately attain liberation. That very service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the process of liberation, because to engage oneself in the service of the Lord is to liberate oneself from material entanglement. Srila Bilwa Mangal Thakur explained this position very nicely. He said, if I have unflinching devotion unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, then mukti or liberation serves me as my maid servant. Mukti, the maid servant, is always ready to go where to do whatever I ask. For a devotee, liberation is no problem at all. Liberation takes place without separate endeavor.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta स्वामी इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम रामा हरे हरे।
Hare Krishna. So today morning, I'll discuss on this topic of the vision that nurtures pure devotion. So how to develop the vision that nurtures pure devotion. I'll take this in three parts, and after each part, you can have a brief pause. If you have any comments or questions, you can discuss. The first part I'll talk is about how we all see the same thing, but we don't see the same thing. How our vision is different for each person. And second part I'll talk is about, based on our vision, that which is a shelter for one person is a trap for another. And last part I'll talk about how we need to intelligently rise from a lower shelter to a higher shelter, ultimately to the shelter of Krishna. So basically, relativity of vision, then relativity of shelters, and the ultimate shelter. These are three main topics I'll talk about. So most of you have probably seen that picture which shows, if you look at a picture, and from one vision it looks like a young woman, another vision it looks like an old woman. Have you seen that picture? Most of you. So you know, that is not logical. That is psychological. So logically it can either be one this or this, but it's psychological. Psychological means each person's mind is different, and based on what is there in our mind, our vision is shaped accordingly. None of us actually studies or looks at the world objectively. There is the study of matter, and there is the study of what matters. So modern science focuses on the study of matter, and it's important in its own way. But for most of us, we focus on what matters. Right now in this room, if we wanted to describe this room, we could describe hundreds of details. We could describe the kind of floor that is there, the kind of chandeliers that are, the kind of roof that is there, the kind of roof that is there, the kind of architecture that is there. We could describe so many things. We could describe the kind of people, which background. So now when you come to here, you focus on the things that matter to you. Say for example, if you want to hear this class, then you want to sit in a place which is reasonably comfortable. If you look around the people who is sitting next to you, you know, if you know that some people tend to be distracted or they have their phone on, then you sit away from them. If you need a fan, you will find out where there is a place below the fan. So basically, whenever we look at a particular thing in a particular situation, we focus on what matters. And there are so many other things about that place which we cannot focus on. In fact, psychologists did some experiment that, say, at a supermarket counter where people submit a bill and then they pay, and then they get the change back along with the receipt. So in between, what they did was, there's one person sitting over there and standing at the counter, and they handed something, and then that person ducked down and another person came up over there. And almost 90% of people didn't even notice there was a change of the person. Because for them, their vision is mainly transactional. It's only if you had given 1,000 rupees and you expected 100 rupees back, and you get 50 rupees back, then you look, hey, why are you not giving me the money? So there the focus is on the transaction. And as long as the other person does the transaction well, it doesn't matter who the person over there is. Even if one person goes and another person comes. So basically we have a
functional or transactional vision of things. It's like, say, when you work on a computer. Now, a computer is an incredibly complicated thing. Now, today, an ordinary laptop today has more computing power than what the 1970s spacecrafts, which are just said to have gone to other planet, other celestial objects, were having. But for us, as long as the computer functions, now I press in some keys and whatever I want appears over there. I press something and what I want to be get done gets done. So then that is the level of perception for us of the computer. So same way with respect to the world at large. That when we function in the world is incredibly complicated. And we don't think about any bigger picture, or we basically, you could say that there can be a low resolution picture. A low resolution picture, a low resolution conception is, okay, I put some, I press some keys and what I want appears on the screen. So it's a device which does what I want me to do. That's a low resolution picture. But if I want a high resolution picture of the computer, there are so many gadgets, so many chips inside it, so many programs inside it. So we don't look at a high resolution picture. So same way when we function in our life, most of us function with a low resolution picture. Low resolution picture is, say that, now I have got this job, and if I go and work over here, I get this money. This is my family member. If I take care of them, they will take care of me. And this is, now why am I calling this a low resolution picture? Because there are so many other levels of reality which are functional. I was staying at a devotee's place in America recently, and he told me that he had come to India for a fortnight. And during that time in his work, he got many emails, but he said, he had gone to Rindavan, other places. He said, I'm not going to check any emails. He said, once I go back to work, I will go there and I will check. So then when he went back to work, he went to his office and he found his office only was not there. So what happened? So during the time when he was away, his company had shut down, the office had shut down, and now something else was there at that place. So we normally, now it's one thing to lose your job, it's one thing to the office itself to disappear. Isn't it? So now, normally, we don't think about the economic upheavals or the big picture of a company or the nation. All that is involved. So when I was in Australia, a devotee from some Zimbabwe had come over there. And he told me about a decade or two ago, the currency of Zimbabwe had devalued so much that once he went to a shop to get some bread, and he took a bucket full of currency notes. And the shopkeeper threw away all the currency notes, took the bucket and gave him bread in exchange for the bucket. So now we consider a currency to be valuable. But there are so many other factors which determine the value of the things. So we have a functional vision of things. And when things don't function the way we want them to, that's when we start looking at either the bigger picture or the deeper picture or whatever. We alter our vision. Say, if my computer doesn't work, if I give currency and I don't get what I expect back, if I go to my office and there is no office, hey, what's going on? So our functional vision expands or deepens when the functional vision doesn't work. So same way with respect to life at large. Most people don't really think about God much. Don't really think about what is the ultimate purpose of existence. Is there some reality beyond the reality of this world? Most people have a functional vision of life. Maybe about 25 years ago, when I just started practicing bhakti, I was sharing the Bhagavad Gita's wisdom with some of my relatives. So I was telling about the existence of God and logical scientific reasoning for that. So my uncle said that, I believe in God. He's happy there, I'm happy here. So, functionally, let him be there. It doesn't matter for me. I was at an interfaith conference in Washington, D.C. And there, different religions were discussing about how to help the youth become more spiritual. So one Christian pastor was saying, what is the prominent conception of a Christian priest or a pastor, depending on Catholicism or Protestantism, among the youth? So there's one youth who gave a very, very intriguing reply. He said that a priest, what is your conception of a priest? So they were asked this as a question. They said, a priest is someone who is constantly worried that someone somewhere is having some fun. So their idea is that, oh, these religious people, they tell us, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. They're simply interfering with our enjoyment. So if that is the conception they have, then why would they want, they would not care about God at all. So for most people, they don't think about God, they have a functional vision of life. And based on what kind of impression they have, like say somebody who is pious, okay, God is there, I am here, I don't want, no need to bother about it. I won't bother him, he won't bother me. Or God and religion are simply there to interfere with my enjoyment, so I don't want anything to do with them. So basically we have a functional vision of life. And depending on what kind of conceptions we have acquired, God we will see as having some functional role or no functional role in it. When we are living in this way, it is only when our existing functional vision doesn't work, that's when we think of altering, expanding or deepening the vision. So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says that there are four kinds of people who approach him. Those four kinds are those who are distressed, those who are distressed, those who are distressed, and those who are distressed. There has to be some basic denominator of dissatisfaction with the world for people to turn towards something higher. Now Krishna says four kinds, those who are inquisitive, those who seek knowledge, those who are distressed, those who seek wealth. But none of these people necessarily need to come to God, especially in today's world. In one sense, progress means providing people more and more alternatives. Do this or do this or do this. But if the progress is in a godless context, it means providing people more and more alternatives to God. So in today's world, if somebody is distressed, they can go to a psychiatrist, they can go here, they can go there, they can go to a therapist. They don't necessarily have to come to God. If somebody needs money, they will go to a bank for a loan. They may not come to God. If somebody is inquisitive, they can just Google and actually I was giving a class in Microsoft in Seattle. So I often give software examples. So they told me that if you are going to give any software example, don't use the word Google. I said, why? He said, because Microsoft promotes Bing. So they have a different search engine. So don't use Google anymore. So everybody has their relative perceptions. But anyway, we can just search on the internet, whichever search engine we use. But we don't have to be inquisitive and come necessarily to God. So basically, when there is some denominator of dissatisfaction or distress so great that the functional vision, functional material vision doesn't work, that's when we start expanding or deepening our vision to perceive something higher, to perceive something deeper. So, in that sense, disruption of our existing situation is required for us to turn towards something spiritual. Now, the disruption can broadly happen in two ways. You know, our life becomes so distressful as it is right now that it's how can I live? I need something higher in my life. Or we have some goals, we achieve those goals, and after we have achieved those goals, we find them unfulfilling. I achieved this, I achieved that, and still there's no satisfaction in this. So either we can be frustrated by failure, or we can be frustrated by success. But when we get some kind of frustration, Prabhupada gives in a lecture, and he's talking to hippies in Rath Yatra lecture. So he says that, all of you hippies are said to be frustrated. Americans don't appreciate you very much because you are considered to be frustrated people. He says, but I appreciated all of you. He says, human life is meant to be frustrated. It is when we are frustrated, then we will inquire about spirituality. Athato brahma jikyasa. So it's interesting, no acharya has given this kind of elaboration of this. Athato brahma jikyasa. When will we do brahma jikyasa? When we are frustrated with life. Brahmanacharya, in his Vedanta Sutra commentary, has almost 100-page commentary on this verse. And talks about how does the urge for brahma jikyasa come upon. So he talks primarily, it can come from previous life, it can come from this life's association. But whether it is a previous life's inclination or this life association, there has to be some frustration at a denominator. So this is so for all of us to take shelter of God. Here it is said, Mai drishte akhilatmani. Mai drishte. Drishte is vision. That's how what I'm talking about is related with this verse. That when will we get this vision that Krishna is the akhilatmani, the supreme soul, the soul who is the soul of all of existence. We will seek to get that vision when our current vision doesn't work. When with the current vision, when we are functioning in the world, something goes wrong with that function. That's when we seek to expand that vision. So this is the first point I was making, that we all have different visions, and when our existing vision is disrupted, so we see that that's when we turn towards God, or at least we intensify our turning towards God. And the whole Bhagavatam is describing dramatic incidents where somebody's existing way of living was disrupted. Parikshit Maharaj was living virtuously, but then suddenly he was cursed and he took shelter of the Lord. It was not that he was not sheltered earlier. He was living a devoted life. But at that time, he took even more intense shelter of the Lord. Vritrasura was living a demoniac life. Because of his body and his conditioning, his behavior was demoniac. But below the body and its conditioning was the soul. And the soul was attracted to Krishna based on his previous life samskaras. And when he faced the imminent death on seeing the uncounterable weapon in the hands of Indra, that's why in one moment, if you see the verses in the sixth canto, till a particular point, he is describing, you, O Indra, are Bhratraha, you are the killer of your own brother, you are Guruha, you are Dvijaha, you are the killer of your guru, you are the killer of a Brahmana, you are the killer of a brother, I will kill you. And then suddenly in one verse he changes, if however you kill me today, then I will give up this body absorbed in the remembrance of the Lord. And thus I will transcend this world. And suddenly from a very confrontational Kshatriya kind of speech, his speech becomes suddenly very transcendental and devotional. So that's because that functional vision is no longer works. He realizes this is a weapon I can't fight against. So then, whatever earlier impressions he had from his previous life, they come to the fore. Gajendra was living a luxurious life, and suddenly when he realized that I can't get rid of this crocodile, he had a functional vision. Hey, what is this crocodile? I'll kick it off. How dare it interfere with my enjoyment? But he realized he just couldn't kick it off. Tried, and when he couldn't, finally then, Narayana Khila Guru Bhagavan Namaste, he expanded his vision. And that's when what he had done in his previous life came back to him. So basically, the disruption of our present functional vision leads to the expansion of our vision to perceive Krishna, to perceive the spiritual side of reality. So any questions or comments about this? Okay. Yes, please.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu. Very nicely described, like the perception matters in short. And even in Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna desired that, Lord, show me how you maintain this universe, Lord showed him. So there was he required that vision to be given, that divine vision. Yet at the same time, he realized that that's not something. He realized that the two-armed form of Krishna is much more pleasing.
Yes.
Than that vision, that ghastly, you know, universal form where he is absorbing everything and he's, you know, causing all the warriors to get into the mouth and all.
That's
that.
True, yeah.
He didn't like that, right? So because he actually had a higher vision. So sometimes you have a higher vision, you're given a lower vision, again, your perception is like you don't accept it so easily as well. So again, perception does matter, very nicely explained.
Yes.
And in Bhagavad Gita also we get a glimpse of that.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good example of the 11th chapter. How Arjuna is... There are, Acharya has explained in two different ways. At one level, if we consider Arjuna to be like a human being, then to get the darshan of Vishwarupa is an elevation of his vision. But if we consider Arjuna to be an intimate devotee of the Lord, then from that level, to see the universal form is a lower level vision. And Prabhupada uses a fascinating phrase over there. He says a devotee is not interested in such a godless display of opulence. Now actually God is displaying his opulence. And Prabhupada is saying this is a godless display of opulence. How is that? Because this is just the show of power is not something which attracts a devotee. So thank you, beautiful example. So, yeah. Give the mic to him.
Hare Krishna. Prabhupada, you told about Vritrasur. So I didn't understand that how he switched from functional to devotional, sir. What was the reason behind it?
Okay. How did Vritrasur shift from functional to devotional vision? Vritrasur was fighting at that time and initially he had overpowered the devatas. The devatas were fleeing. But then Indra got this astra, which was made with the body of Dadichi and which was blessed by Narayan. And when Vritrasur saw that, he knew this is a weapon I can't counter. So when he faced death right in front of him, that's when the functional vision, oh, what is this? That got disrupted. And see, what happens is when we say that our spiritual impressions are carried from one life to another, Purva abhyasena tenaiva riyate yavashopisaha. Purva abhyas, what we have done in our previous lives, that comes over spontaneously to the next life. Now, that is true, but that doesn't mean it will happen right from birth. It's no matter, even if a soul is very, very advanced and that soul is born in the next life as a baby, it's not likely that the baby, when comes out of the mother womb, the baby will be saying Hare Krishna. No, based on the soul is encased in a particular body at that time. So naturally the soul will cry. But then when circumstantially a soul is exposed to bhakti, to some spiritual stimuli, then just take it up. Take it up with fascination. I was in Brisbane just a few months ago and I met one devotee. Normally when we meet devotees, he's Australian, so I asked him, How were you introduced? He said his introduction was through the Sanskrit syllables. He said he read the Devanagari, he was searching something on the internet and he saw your Devanagari script he saw. He said, this is fascinating, what is this? He is so captivated by that. He says, what is this? What is written in this? I want to learn more about this. And he searched around, who can teach me Sanskrit? Who can teach me more about Sanskrit? And he went to the local temple. And he found that he was a little disappointed because nobody knew Sanskrit over there. So then they said, somebody was going to Vrindavan. He went to Vrindavan and met Gopi Bharanandan Prabhu, who was a very scholarly Prabhupada disciple. And it was like people take years to learn Sanskrit. Within just a few months, he's so captivated. He said that I have never feel attracted to English script the way I am attracted to Sanskrit Devanagari script. So that when a situation came up, that captivation, that attraction arose. So, that attraction toward the transcendental, even if it is impressed within us, it may require a particular situation when it is brought out. So, for Vritrasura, that facing death was a situation when it came up. Okay. So the first point I discussed was how we all see the same thing, but we don't see the same thing. Because our vision is functional. And based on what is important, what matters for us, we all see differently. The second point I was going to make is that how, you know, what one vision sees as a shelter, another vision sees as a fetter, sees as a restrictor, sees as a prison. I was in New Zealand, and there was a devotee, his person has become a devotee. He has a construction company. And he was showing me his company website, and the slogan over there was, like some people have mottos, so it says, our houses are as comfortable as your mother's womb. Now, he was just very newly introduced to Krishna consciousness, so probably he has not heard about the third canto and all that. But then, I was talking with a devotee doctor, and actually, now if you consider from the biological perspective, the mother's womb is designed by nature to be a very safe and comfortable place. It is from the perspective, if we consider the baby to be like a biological bag. There is enough protection. Of course, the mother also has to take care. But for the various shocks and jerks that might come, the womb is a comfortable place. But if we consider that the baby is a conscious being, then for a conscious being to be constricted in a very small cramped space, that is not at all comfortable. So from a biological perspective, yes, the womb is a comfortable place. Nature designs things in such a way that to maximize the possibility of survival. And the baby is so tender that the basic level of comfort is there. So what will seem comfortable in one vision, the biological vision, will seem uncomfortable in another vision. That is the vision of a conscious being there. So similarly, if we consider at various levels what one person may consider as a shelter, another person may consider as an attachment. Now, what do I mean by this? That what one person may think as a shelter, another may see as an attachment. That if we consider a small bird, the birds are said to be dvija, they are born twice. So first they are born inside the mother's shell. Inside the shell basically. The mother gives out an egg and they are born inside that. Now, for the baby birds, the shell is an essential shelter. And if they are prematurely brought out of the shell, then they can't live. They can't survive. Just like if a baby is prematurely born, then you need to replicate the conditions that were in the mother's womb so that it can survive. So the shell is a protector for the baby bird. But when the bird has grown up sufficiently, then it has to come out of the shell. And there is a laborious process for that. It's a painful process. The bird has to break the nest. And it breaks the nest, so not the nest, the shell. It cracks a little bit. And then a wing comes out and the wing flaps again. Then the shell cracks on its, closes back on its wings and it's in pain. And then it pushes again. Just like when the baby comes out of the mother's womb, the labor is a painful process. The labor is a laborious process. So basically we could say that there is one level of order, which is inside the shell or inside the womb. And there is another level of order, which is outside. And we could say for the baby, life outside the womb, for the bird, outside life outside the shell, is much bigger, much freer, much brighter. But you cannot go from inside the womb or shell to outside before the right time. And to go from here to there requires disruption. So basically we could say there is order, then there is order at one level and there is order at another level. To go from order at one level to order at another level, in between there is chaos. Basically order means what? Order means when we do something and we expect a particular result and that result comes. Chaos means that what we do and what result comes, there is no predictability in it. See, all of you are sitting in this class peacefully. Every one of you is almost 100% confident that suddenly the person next to you is not going to turn at you and slap you in the face. Now, you could say it's possible, but it's not probable. And that level of order is essential so that you can focus and hear. Say if you are traveling in a crowded local and there you want to hear a class and somebody has their elbow digs into your chest, and then you cannot concentrate at that. So there is order, then there is another level of order, and in between there is chaos. So similarly for us, we usually live within various material shelters. So we live within the shelter, say, I belong to this, I'm a member of this family, I'm a member of this community, I'm a member of this state, I'm a member of this country. So when that order is threatened, when chaos comes up, when the order is threatened, that's where we think about some higher order and try to go toward that higher order. Recently, this Cricket World Cup was going on, and I was in Australia at that time, so I was in touch with a devotee friend in London. So he was telling me that his friend had come from India to London just for this India-Pakistan cricket match. And at that time, there was a fear that there would be heavy rains, there was rains going on, and the match might get wiped out. So he had purchased the tickets, and it was something like, he purchased a ticket for £2,000. That's almost like nearly 2 lakh rupees. One ticket. And he said, this friend was an atheist, but he was also praying, you know, please, there be no rains, let the match take place. So what happens when the existing order doesn't work? So you go for a cricket match, and there is what you expect is, I'll be able to see the match over there. But when there is chaos, oh, the match didn't take, what happened? So India was expected to defeat New Zealand. But when we got defeated, this chaos. So now there are hundreds of articles doing post-mortem analysis. You know, what went wrong? What went wrong? What went wrong? So it's like, you know, everybody is expert at giving advice. In fact, there is no charity that we give as freely as advice. So, what seems a shelter at one level. So for a bird, when it is tender, it needs to be inside the womb, inside the shell. For the baby, it needs to be inside the womb, but then it has to come out. So similarly for us, we live inside certain shelters, certain functional visions of life which give us some shelter. And to go from that shelter to another level of shelter, that requires the disruption of our existing order. It's only when the existing order is disrupted, then it's like, this is order, this is chaos, and this is order. So we have to go through chaos to the order. But the challenge is, say when we are trying to, say when people are living within their own particular conceptions of life, and we want to get them to come to the Krishna conscious conception. Yes, you may have many shelters, but Krishna is your ultimate shelter. And take shelter of Krishna. So to some extent, whenever we are sharing Krishna consciousness, it is, see, preaching means to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comforted. So that means if somebody's existing order is already disrupted, and then, oh, they're already afflicted, then give them, you know, this has gone wrong, that has gone wrong, then give them the shelter. That actually Krishna is still in charge. That Krishna is still with you. And give them a perception of a higher order. And that's how comfort the afflicted. And then sometimes, if somebody is comfortably situated inside their own shell, and they don't want to come out, then we have to afflict the comforted. This shell is not going to be as it is, as you think it is going to be. So, but what may happen is, if we break the shell, if we try to break the shell, and that breaking of the shell involves creating some chaos. Now the purpose of that chaos is to get them to a higher level of order. To get them from the lower shelter to the higher shelter. But if this is not done carefully, then what happens is that people, because this chaos is very, very difficult to navigate. And if during that chaos, there's not proper guidance, not proper support, not proper encouragement, then people basically we break this shelter, and instead of coming to this higher level of shelter, they go down further into a further chaos. Say for example, if somebody is, say, worshipping a particular conception of God. So there are demigods and there are semi-gods. So semi-gods are say me God. I am God. So there are people who claim like that. Now, when somebody is worshipping someone like that, now we may say that, now this is not correct. And we may want to get them to worship Krishna. Now the intention is good. But if somebody starts saying, you say, no, this is not God, Krishna is God, and they get confused. And if we have not developed enough, we have not helped them create faith, then they may say, this religion business is very confusing. Now different people claim, this is God, I will have nothing to do with religion. And they become materialists and atheists. So they had some order here, we wanted to get them to this higher level of order. But if we disrupt their order and they go down to a lower level of disorder, a greater disorder, or a very small, much smaller order, then we are not doing service, we are doing disservice. So many times when devotees are preaching, I don't like the word preaching also because it is such a preachy word. It seems as if you are putting yourself on a higher position and preaching. But whenever we are trying to share Krishna consciousness, at that time, we often say, I brought this person to Krishna. So many people came to Krishna because of me. I made so many people into devotees. So sometimes as preachers, we may become proud of that. And we may keep a track of so many people may become devotees. But who among us keeps track of how many people didn't come to Krishna because of me? Isn't it? Sometimes we might have disrupted the way they conceived and they thought of things. And because of that, they may have gone away from Krishna. So, Krishna says, Na buddhi bhedam janayet agyanam karma sanginam. Joshayet sarva karmani vidvan yuktah samacharan. He says, Na buddhi bhedam janayet. Do not disturb the minds of people. It's interesting. This is 326 in the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada translates it as mind, but a Sanskrit word is buddhi. Na buddhi bhedam. Bheda means to divide, to create holes. Na buddhi bhedam janayet. Agyanam karma sangina. Even if people are ignorant and attached, agyanam karma sangina, still na buddhi bhedam. Don't disturb. What? Based on people's minds, how their mind is, they acquire certain conceptions. And often people use their intelligence to justify whatever they are doing. Say somebody is walking and they slip and fall down. Now for many people, if they fall down, nothing is injured, but their pride is injured. So I will say, hey, did you fall down? He says, no, I was just checking whether gravity is still working. That is, you're denying reality. So somebody, if say an airplane crashes, and then the airline does the investigation, and then they decide, they come up with, why did the airplane crash? He says, it crashed because of gravity. That's not an explanation, isn't it? Yeah, gravity is always there. In spite of gravity, it has to work. So what happens is, based on the conceptions that people have, people use their intelligence to justify the existing order that they are in. And they don't want it disrupted. That's why, although it is, Sanskrit is na buddhi bhedam janayet, and Prabhupada uses the word mind. Say, don't disturb people's minds. Based on how people's minds, for most people, their intelligence doesn't control their mind, their intelligence obeys their mind. That means what I feel, I use my intelligence to justify that. Therefore, na buddhi bhedam janayet. So anyway, the point I was making is that when we disrupt people's existing level of order, now we need to take responsibility to take them to a higher level of order. Otherwise, we simply disrupt their order and they end up going to a lower level of order. I remember maybe 20-25 years ago, I was just introduced to Krishna consciousness, maybe a year or so. So there is what is called the zeal of the new convert, where you want to convert everyone else. So I used to work in a company, and one of my, from the same college, and there was another student who had also joined the same, who had also been hired in the same company. So we used to go by bus. So my stop was a little before him, and his stop was two stops afterwards. So he would join. And it was about a 1 hour ride on the bus, so usually I would chant, or I would read, or I'd hear something. I would, at that time, think, all these people are materialistic. No need to spend time talking with them. So then, this friend one day made the big mistake of asking me, what are you doing? And then, you know, the next 45 minutes, I gave him a concentrated six-session course of the Bhagavad Gita. Starting from, you know, how God exists, evidence for God's existence, evidence for soul's existence, evidence for karma, evidence for how this world is dukkhalaya, evidence for how Krishna alone is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how chanting is the Yuga Dharma. And, you know, I was figuratively patting myself on the back. You know, how intelligently I have concentrated the whole six-session course in 45 minutes. And then I didn't even notice that his eyes were glazing. Head is, and then after that, whenever he would enter that bus, normally bus has two doors. So he would peep into the door, look at where I was sitting, and enter from the door far away from me. So recently I was in Seattle. In Seattle only. And then his sister has now become a devotee. So probably his sister undid the damage that I did at that time. So then he had come to meet me. And then both of us, we remembered, and then I apologized to him for that. So he was laughing. So, for him it was just a casual inquiry. I didn't have to give like a complete philosophical dose to him at that time. So we need to present Krishna consciousness in a way that can help people rise from where they are to the next level. So what might seem like an attachment for someone, at one level, oh, you are attached to your worldly way of living. Okay, but that is giving them the shelter at that particular point. Now, if we are going to disrupt somebody's existing shelter, we have to be there to help them rise to a higher level of shelter. If we are simply going to disrupt shelter, then we may be well doing disservice to people. So, of course, Krishna is ultimately there and we don't do anything. It is Krishna who does through us and through others. So we need to understand that we can't just dismiss people as saying, you are attached. No, that might be what shelters them at that particular point in life. And from that point, for them to rise to a higher point, it might require some gradual process. Some people can go rapidly, some people may go slowly. But we just can't disrupt people's existing order and leave at that. We have to help them rise to a higher level of order. And I'll conclude. This was the second point. At what seems like shelter to one can seem what seems like entanglement for one can be like a shelter for another. So I'll go to third point and then we can have some questions. So now last point I was going to say is that we need to intelligently for ourselves as well as for others rise from our existing shelter to a higher shelter. What does that mean? That let's look at the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva was just a small 5-year-old boy and he was insulted. And when he went to the forest, he was so hurt, so angered because his father had neglected him and his stepmother had derided him, had mocked him. Actually, his stepmother mocking him. His stepmother mocking him did not affect him as much as his father neglecting him. The children are very perceptive, and small children. Sometimes if you come into a room, if there are two people and there's some tension between them, it's almost you can perceive that the atmosphere in this room is tense. So sometimes you enter into a room, it appears like you are walking into a landmine. And understand, there might be no specific words that anybody has spoken, but you can sense the tension in the room. And just as we can perceive that, even small children can perceive that. So there was a tension between Suruchi and Suniti, and even Dhruva as a small 5-year-old boy could perceive that. So Suruchi speaking harshly to him didn't hurt him that much, because that was to be expected. But when his father neglected him, did not stop, that was what hurt him the most. That it says the harshest words of our critics don't hurt us as much as the silence of our friends. Critics, that's what they are going to do. That they are going to criticize. But our friends, we hope, we expect that they will defend us. So basically for Dhruva, he was living a comfortable life in his home, and suddenly that order was disrupted. It's chaos. Now when that chaos came up, at that time his mother realized that I can't resolve this for you. Now his anger was directed towards his father. He said, you did not allow me to sit on your lap. I will get up, not just sit on your lap, I will sit on the throne that you are sitting. And not just on the throne you are sitting, I will sit on a bigger throne. I will get a kingdom bigger than yours and sit on that throne. So then he started, his mother told him, I cannot help you, but that same Lord who helps all living beings, you go and take shelter of him. Now he was ready to go through all the chaos for a small child to go into the forest at the age of 5 all alone. It requires a lot of courage. When he went there, at that time Narad Muni is almost omnipresent in the Bhagavatam. He's like Krishna. Wherever he is needed, he's there. Of course, many people feel he's not needed also. Kamsa thought that he was not needed. Why is he coming here? But Narad Muni is always there. So Narad Muni immediately came there. And when he came there, what happened is, Narad Muni first told him that, you know, you're a small child and children sometimes get teased, they quarrel, and then they resolve. Sometimes, you know, two children quarrel, and then when they quarrel, they say, Katti, I'm never going to talk with you. And the next day, they're playing together. So, they don't take it very seriously. So, you're a child. Children, just small things happen. Don't take it very seriously. Or, if you think you are adult, then those who are really mature, they understand that honor and dishonor keep coming and going in this world. So just tolerate this dishonor. Go back and everything will be alright. So now Dhruva, he said, the words that you have spoken are right, but they are not right for me. I have been so terribly hurt that I cannot just tolerate this dishonor. I want to solve this. I want a kingdom bigger than me. Bigger than what my father has. If you can help me, please help me. Otherwise, let me go my way. So basically what happened is, you could say that Dhruva's anger was material. Dishonor in that situation was simply a material emotion. But when Narad Muni offered him the shelter which was too high for him to take, was too high for him to take, then he couldn't take that shelter. And he said, I can't take it. Like traditionally, many of the temples are, say, on top of hills. Like if you have Tirupati or others. Now, of course, we may have buses to go up. But in the past, if you had to go to take darshan of Tirupati, you had to climb up. And that's quite tiring. But those who are devoted, they are ready to take that climb. But Prabhupada, when he was asked, you know, what is the most suited place for a temple? He said, that which is most accessible to people. Where most people can easily come. So the idea is that those who are devoted, they will take that huge leap up. But most people are not that devoted. And then we can't expect them to take that big leap. We have to help them take baby steps forward. The whole point of having temples in the cities, having many centers in different parts, of the world and different parts within the cities also is that people can easily come. So for Dhruva, this order to that order, this order was, oh, you're comfortable in your home and just tolerate dishonor. He said, I can't do that. It is too big a leap for him. When it was too big a leap, now Dhruva could have taken that leap. He said, oh, Narad Muni is giving instruction. How can I disobey? But he did not do that because he knew he would not be able to sustain it. And he said, this instruction is not right for me. And when he was candid like that, then Narad Muni gave him an order in between. What was that? See, there is basically we can approach God with two moods. And devotion itself has these two moods. One is to transform the world and the other is to transcend the world. So, devotion has this world transcending and world transforming aspects. And we see these two very dramatically in the contrast of the emphasis in Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is spoken to Arjuna who has to fight a war to establish dharma in the world. And when Arjuna says, I will renounce the world, Krishna says, no. Dharma samsthapanarthaya. You have to help me to establish dharma. So the Bhagavad Gita's entire focus is on transforming the world. Acting in the world to recreate some order in the world which has been disrupted. To create a pious, virtuous, dharmic order in the world. The Bhagavatam is spoken to someone who has already renounced the world and that person has already accepted that I am going to die in 7 days. So then he just renounces the world and focuses on hearing the Bhagavatam. That is world transcending. Now for most of us, our life is like a wedding of both of these. There is some situations we need to transcend the world. So for example, when we are doing sadhana, say when we are doing our japa or when we are hearing a class, at that time, you know, if a class goes for 1 hour, we'll be anxious. How many messages have come on my phone? Say, I want to check it. Many of us would be like that. So, but I gave a class in Denver University on, do you need to break up with your phone? If people have this idea of breaking up in their relationship, so do you need to break up with your phone? So I was asking the students over there, are there any times when you have very seriously been distracted from something important because of the phone? So many of them gave such incidents. You know, most common is you're driving a car and then you get distracted because a message comes up. So so basically the point I'm making by this example is that there are some times when we need to transcend the world. Just put aside the distractions. But we are also serving in this world. Not only do we have our response, our families and our jobs, but even as devotees, when we are serving Krishna in this world, we're trying to spread his mission. At that time, we need to focus on transforming the world. Transforming the world means doing what is required to make changes in the world. So we need to know. So, for example, this is the order over here. I say we have a particular order is that the order is that, okay, I have my family, I have my job, I have my temple, I have this, and this is how my life is going on. And the higher order is that ultimately Krishna is in control of everything. So now there is a practical level of order that is also required for us to serve Krishna. And sometimes the practical order is disrupted and we take shelter of the ultimate order. Krishna, nothing is working, I take shelter of you. But for our day-to-day functioning, we have to maintain the order. Say for example, now all of you have come for class. Now, after class there is prasad. And if prasad is not there, there is a disorder. Isn't it? Oh, what happened? I'm hungry. So somebody has to take care of that so that the prasad comes on time. So we cannot transcend the world when we are meant to transform the world. Long ago I was given when 25 years ago when I started speaking about Krishna, I was given by a senior devotee 10 guidelines about how to speak in public for Krishna. So the last guideline was depend on Krishna. It is in bracket, but only after you have prepared your class. So, if I come, I may be speaking about depending on Krishna. But I have to prepare the class. So preparing means transforming. Transforming my thoughts so that they are in a proper order. So, there are situations for most of us in our life, we need to have our present level of order established and restored so that we can practice bhakti. But we don't want to be restricted to this level of order. We know that there is a higher order also, and this order is meant to help me go towards the higher order. Just like, say, for a child, there are parents. Now, children who are without parents, or say single parent families or whatever, it's very difficult for them to have normal psychological growth. So the normal family structure is very important. That's the order. But if the parents are devotees and the parents help children to also at least get impressions of Krishna, then this is the order that facilitates the higher order. But if the parents are godless, in fact there are some atheists who are super aggressive. They are not atheists, they are antitheists. They are on a mission against God. And they say that, you know, for parents to pass on their religious beliefs to their children is child abuse. And it's like that in UK especially. UK has one of the world's most aggressive antitheists. So they are saying that parents don't have the right to indoctrinate their children like that. Well, yeah, children also have their own choice and they will grow up and make their choices in due course. But you cannot just leave the children to do whatever they want. Parents have to discipline and guide their children. So there has to be an existing order. But that order should be such that it facilitates the higher order. So, for all of us, we need to wisely know when to transform our existing situation so that the order is restored, and when to transcend the existing situation to rise to a higher order. And this can be done in three broad ways, with which I'll conclude this talk. I call this as basically when our existing order is being disrupted. So we have three options: tolerate, mitigate, or emigrate. So, tolerate, let's say for example, if we are traveling in a local, and while traveling in a local at that time, it's a local has capacity of 50 people, but there are 300 people in that local. It's squeezed. And then in every group of people, there are always some bullies. So say we are standing and the person next to us is pushing us. You think you are a boss? I'll show you what I am. We push them back. And they push us. And we push them back. And they push us and we push them back. And we get so caught in pushing and counter-pushing that our station comes and goes. We are still pushing. You know, that is ludicrous. So, it's a small thing. That thing. You know, okay, you want to show off your strength? I'll just move somewhere. It's just half an hour ride. I'll ride. So, at that time, tolerate. So, tolerate means what? Keep small things small so that you can focus on the big thing. So the order is that we are all sitting in that car, we are all in that train, standing in that train, and the order is that we want to go to our destination. So there is some disruption in that order, but tolerate it. It's a small thing. The small thing is how comfortable we are in that situation. The big thing is whether we get to our destination or not. So keep small things small so that we can focus on the big things. But suppose that person starts pushing us, not just pushing us, but pushing us out of the train. Then we can't tolerate that. Because then it's no longer a small thing. It's interfering with the big thing. So then we have two options. Either mitigate. Mitigate means, you know, we maybe call out to other people for help, call out the TC, or do something to counter that situation. Or if say 2 minutes that person is like a part of a gang and everybody else is ganging up with them, then you might say, I'll just go to another coach. So immigrate. So either we can mitigate or we can immigrate. So similarly for us, when we go through difficulties, see, we all have certain, basically whenever we face any difficulty, that means we have certain vision, we have certain attachment based on that vision, and that is being disrupted. So now what do I do at that time? So at that time, what do I do is that I have to find out what is my big purpose. My big purpose, and focus on that big purpose. If you focus on that big purpose, then the small purpose, small thing, even if it has gone wrong, it doesn't matter that much. It doesn't matter that much. So we keep the small things small so that we can focus on the big things. And when we have this vision of focusing on the big thing, then we can decide whether to tolerate, to mitigate, or to emigrate. So when the order is disrupted, so at that time, how best should I work to restore this order, or should I just transcend this? Should I try to transform the situation, restore the order over here? Or should I decide that this just can't be transcended? This can't be transformed. So let me just transcend the situation. So we could say, tolerating is like transcending the situation. Just leave it as it is. Okay, it is by Krishna's arrangement that the situation is like this. So we need to have that expertise to know when to tolerate and when to mitigate or immigrate. And that's where I said we need to be wise, we need to be expert. So I was at a program in Harvard University, and there after that one Hindu boy had come. He was like a little skeptical. So before that somebody had come and given there a fire and brimstone kind of class on karma. So he says, you know, if you kill animals, you will become an animal and you will be killed, you will be slaughtered. If you slaughter animals, you will be slaughtered. So if somebody slaughters cows, they will become cows and they will be slaughtered. So this boy asked this question, and the previous time when he had asked the question, it was like the whole program had been reduced to a laughing stock, and the speaker had become very embarrassed by that. So he said, his question was that, now if you say that if you slaughter cows, then you will become a cow in your next life and you will be slaughtered. That means that all those who are cows now, they were cow slaughterers in their previous life. So what's wrong in them being slaughtered now? Now, this is in logic, it is called the error of the antecedent. Error of the antecedent means what? If A, then B. That doesn't mean if B, then A. That means, say, if it rains, the pavement will be wet. If A, then B. But if the pavement is wet, that doesn't necessarily mean it has rained. It could be that there was a leakage over somewhere, or somebody was carrying some buckets of water, and some water spilled over. It could be that there was a garden which was being watered, and some water went over there. So unless you can prove that B's only cause is A, you cannot infer if B, then A. So yes, those who slaughter animals, the principle of karma is that whatever wrong we have done, that wrong, we will be accountable for that. And this idea that if we kill animals, we will become animals, that is indicative. The law of karma is gahana karmanogati. It's not necessary that each time it has to happen that way only. But so the point is that if a soul is in a cow's body, right now, we have no knowledge that how that soul has come in the cow's body. It could be that the soul has evolved over many lifetimes. It could be that the soul is a devotee of the Lord and is in a body that is very dear to the Lord. We don't know. So for us, and we can't judge people based on their previous lives. We have to function with people based on the order that is there in this life. So in this case, the order is disrupted. We are meant to protect animals, especially cows. And that protection is not there, that order needs to be restored. So we need to have the right vision. The right vision is that in this case, we have to do what we can to help Krishna, to assist Krishna in establishing dharma. So here, rather than focusing on what is whose karma, we have to focus on what is my dharma. Not what is whose karma, but what is my dharma. So sometimes our dharma is that, okay, things are such that we can't do anything about it. We just have to tolerate. But if we have the power to change, then we need to change. So there has to be order in this world. So Krishna, if you see 6, 7, 8 in the Bhagavad Gita, he says dharma samsthapana, I come to establish dharma. That is transforming the world. And 9 after that is 4, chapter 9, verse I'm talking about, 7, 8, 9. 4, 9 is ಜನ್ಮ ಕರ್ಮ ಚ ಮೇ ದಿವ್ಯಂ ಏವಂ ಯೋ ವೆತ್ತಿ ತತ್ವತಃ ತ್ಯಕ್ತ್ವಾ ದೇಹಂ ಪುನರ್ಜನ್ಮ ನೈತಿ ಮಾಮೇತಿ ಸೋ ಅರ್ಜುನ. ಸೊ ದಿಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಟಾಕಿಂಗ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಟ್ರಾನ್ಸೆಂಡಿಂಗ್ ದ ವರ್ಲ್ಡ್. ಯು ಬಿಕಮ್ ಅಬ್ಸಾರ್ಬ್ಡ್ ಇನ್ ಮೀ ಅಂಡ್ ಯು ವಿಲ್ ಅಟೈನ್ ಮೀ. ಸೊ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹ್ಯಾಸ್ ಬೋಥ್ ದೀಸ್ ಪರ್ಪಸಸ್, ಟು ಟ್ರಾನ್ಸ್ಫಾರ್ಮ್ ದ ವರ್ಲ್ಡ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಟು ಟ್ರಾನ್ಸೆಂಡ್ ದ ವರ್ಲ್ಡ್. ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ವಾಸ್ ಇನ್ ವೃಂದಾವನ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಹಿ ವಾಸ್ ಟ್ರಾನ್ಸೆಂಡೆಂಟಲ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಹಿ ಕುಡ್ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಸ್ಟೇಡ್ ಟ್ರಾನ್ಸೆಂಡೆಂಟಲ್. ಬಟ್ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ಕೇಮ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ವೃಂದಾವನ್, ಲೆಫ್ಟ್ ವೃಂದಾವನ್ ಟು ಗೋ ಟು ಅಮೆರಿಕಾ. ಆಕ್ಚುಲಿ ದಟ್ಸ್ ಅ ಇನ್ಕರೆಕ್ಟ್ ಅಂಡರ್ಸ್ಟ್ಯಾಂಡಿಂಗ್. ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ಡಿಡ್ ನಾಟ್ ಲೀವ್ ವೃಂದಾವನ್ ಟು ಗೋ ಟು ಅಮೆರಿಕಾ. ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ಕ್ಯಾರಿಡ್ ವೃಂದಾವನ್ ವಿತ್ ಹಿಮ್ ಟು ಅಮೆರಿಕಾ. ವೇರ್ ಎವರ್ ಹಿ ವೆಂಟ್ ಹಿ ಕ್ರಿಯೇಟೆಡ್ ರೆಪ್ಲಿಕಾಸ್ ಆಫ್ ವೃಂದಾವನ್, ಹಿ ಕ್ರಿಯೇಟೆಡ್ ರೆಪ್ಲಿಕಾಸ್ ಆಫ್ ವೈಕುಂಠ. ಬಟ್ ಹಿ ವಾಸ್ ಆನ್ ಅ ಮಿಷನ್ ಫಾರ್ ಟ್ರಾನ್ಸ್ಫಾರ್ಮಿಂಗ್ ದ ವರ್ಲ್ಡ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಟೈರ್ಲೆಸ್ಲಿ ಹಿ ವೆಂಟ್ ಅಕ್ರಾಸ್ ಟ್ರಾವೆಲಿಂಗ್ ಟ್ರಾನ್ಸ್ಫಾರ್ಮಿಂಗ್ ದ ವರ್ಲ್ಡ್. ಅಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ವೆನ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಬಾಡಿ ಕಂಪ್ಲೀಟ್ಲಿ ಬ್ರೋ, ಆಲ್ದೋ ಹಿಸ್ ಬಾಡಿ ವಾಸ್ ಓಲ್ಡ್, ಸ್ಟಿಲ್ ಹಿ ವೆಂಟ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಮಿಷನ್ ಆಫ್ ಟ್ರಾನ್ಸ್ಫಾರ್ಮಿಂಗ್ ದ ವರ್ಲ್ಡ್. ಬಟ್ ಇವೆಂಚುಲಿ ವೆನ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಬಾಡಿ ಲಿಟ್ರಲಿ ಬ್ರೋಕ್ ಡೌನ್ ಕುಂಡು ಮಚ್, then he again returned to Vrindavan. And then he told devotees, don't disturb me with any managerial issues now. Till that point, devotees would write to him from various parts of the world and he would respond to them. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters, Prabhupada was given practical guidance. He was focusing at that time on transforming the world. But then, when he wanted, in his last time came, just disconnected from everything and transcend the world. So our practice of bhakti has to be a dynamic dance of world transcending and world transforming. So when we have to transcend the world and when we should transform the world. So if we are working at our jobs, we are working at taking care of a family, that time our mind starts saying, you know, I want to go to the temple, I want to chant, I want to read shastra. Yes, there is a time for that, I'll do that. But right now, this is, let me do this in the mood of service to Krishna. This is world transforming. And then when we come to the temple, when we are doing our japa, when we are doing our puja, when we are doing our shastra study, at that time, oh, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to do that, our mind will say that. No, okay, all those things I will do later. So our mind messes our bhakti by making us want to transcend when we are meant to transform, and making us transform when we are meant to transcend. But that's why if we are wise, if we are intelligent, if our intelligence is sharp, we'll know when to transcend and when to transform. So when we learn this expertly, then our devotion will become like a dynamic dance. You know, doing what is required at the right time, but through it all, moving towards Krishna consistency. Yeah, so if we focus too much at transforming or too much at transcending, then our devotion will become imbalanced. But balance means to know when to transcend, when to transform. And that way, although our life will have ups and downs, but we'll be able to find our way toward Krishna steadily. And ultimately, when we become absorbed in Krishna, then at the end of our lives, if our love for Krishna has become more than our love for the world, then Krishna will take us out of this world to his eternal abode. So I'll summarize. I spoke on this topic today about how to foster, cultivate the vision that will nurture devotion. So I talked about first the relativity of vision, that we all see the same thing but we don't see the same thing. Our vision is functional. We have a low resolution picture of things based on not what it is made of but what matters to us. Not what is matter but what matters. And that applies to gadgets, that applies even to people, and that applies to the world. So in our functional vision there may not be any place for God, or there may be a small place for God. But when that functional vision is disrupted, that order is disrupted, then we start thinking of something higher. So then I talked about how what can seem like a shelter, seem like a bondage for one person, attachment for one person, can be like a shelter for another. So there is order at one level, there is order at another level, but in between there is chaos. So for a baby or a baby bird, the womb or the nest are order, and it's needed for a particular time. But then beyond that time, that order starts suffocating. So the transition from the order through chaos to order requires expert assistance, expert guidance. So when we are preaching, one part is that we need to disrupt people's existing order. But also we need to raise them to a higher level of order. If we only disrupt their existing order, then they may go down to a lower level of disorder. And then we are doing disservice. We may count how many people came to Krishna because of me, But how many people didn't come to Krishna because of me? That is also an important thing to keep track of. So don't disturb people's minds, Krishna says. That means that don't disrupt people's existing order without raising them to higher level of order. And then how to raise others or ourselves to a higher level of order? We talked about how there is two aspects to devotion, world transforming and world transcending. World transforming means that we try to restore order at this world level. And world transcending means we just focus on the ultimate order, that Krishna is in charge. So the Bhagavad Gita has the mood of world transformation, the Bhagavatam the mood of world transcending. And we all need to know which vision to adopt, when to transform, when to transcend. I talked about tolerate, mitigate and immigrate. So tolerate is like just transcend, existing order, okay. Mitigate and immigrate means we transform. And we talked about how Dhruva, when he was given a very high level of order to seek, he said, I can't do that. I can't just tolerate. So then he was given a devotional vision, but with a transforming focus. That's that. He goes, guided by Narad Muni to attain a big kingdom by which he could transform. And then when he transcended. He was so satisfied by that connection with Krishna. So for all of us, in our personal practice of bhakti, balance means to know when we should focus on transforming the world and when on transcending the world. When we have that sense of purpose of connecting with Krishna, then our life will become like a dynamic, expert dance of transforming and transcending, through which all will move towards increasing our attachment to Krishna and ultimately attaining Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Okay. Over there. Behind. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Thank you very much for nicely explaining world transforming and world transcending aspects. You explained how to deal it with maturity on personal level by tolerating, mitigating or emigrating. But on organizational level also, there is lot of differences of opinion between liberals and conservatives about how to, what extent on organizational level we should be engaged in world transforming aspect and world transcending aspect. So will you please put some light on this topic?
Yes. So at organization level, there can be differences of opinion and different preferences about what is, how much to engage in world transformation and how much to engage in world transcending. Yes. In general, in conflict resolution, there is a principle. Every story has how many sides? Any idea? Yes. Not two sides, three sides. My side, your side, and the right side. So basically, you know, there is no one answer to this. That, see, conservatives basically, they say that, let's maintain the existing order. The way things were, we should continue them. Because they are working, and they have worked. And those who are liberals, they say, actually, but they're not working. You see, this is not working, this is not working, this is not working. So we need to make changes. Now Prabhupada himself, was he conservative, was he liberal? He was both. Now the fact that he went to the West, that itself indicates that he was not ultra-conservative. Because traditionally sannyasis are not meant to, it is according to some injunctions, that sannyasis is not meant to cross oceans and go to the places where there is a lot of contamination. Prabhupada went there. Prabhupada spent time with people and initiated and elevated people who were, you know, the hippies. See, in India, at least traditional Indian culture, the Western people were considered degraded. But the hippies were considered degraded even by Western standards. So they were considered degraded by the degraded. And Prabhupada spent time with them, Prabhupada cooked with them, Prabhupada washed their plates. Prabhupada accommodated them in hundreds of ways. So we can't say Prabhupada was only conservative. Prabhupada was liberal in many ways to accommodate people. So rather than getting into this controversy of conservative or liberal, we have to see what is effective, what is purposeful, what helps people to connect with Krishna the best. So it's like we could say that life, our life journey, we could say at an organizational level, it's like a winding path. It's like there is a winding mountain path with steep falls on both sides. So sometimes the path is winding towards the right and sometimes the path is winding towards the left. So some things, they need to be kept as they are. So you could say moving towards the right is the conservatives. You know, let's keep things as they are. Moving towards the left is the liberals. Change things. So now, should we change or should we keep things as they are? We have to do what will take us along the path. If the path is moving towards the left, then we have to move towards the left. If the path is moving towards the right, we need to move towards the right. So now, how do we know? In life, you can't really see the path ahead of you clearly. We don't know the future, but we have to pool the best intelligence together and based on discussion, understand. That's why having discussions, respectful discussions is very important. Whenever there are differences of opinion, see, when discussions stop, it is not that the confrontation stops. There are discussions, and then there is destruction. So when discussion stops, the differences don't stop. The differences grow so much that destruction happens. So therefore, there has to be regular discussions. And so then, sometimes the conservatives are right, sometimes the liberals are right. So if both of them have a respectful discussion with each other, then we can move forward. And Prabhupada said that our love will be will be shown by how we cooperate. Now cooperate, at the most basic level we could say, cooperate can also mean cooperate. You know, you do this, I will do this. I will operate here, you operate there. But let's cooperate. At least don't criticize each other. You know, ultimately, everybody is here to go toward Krishna and take others toward Krishna. So, if a particular method of getting people toward Krishna works, then that's wonderful. Others will also take it up. If something is not working, and then something else has to be done, Prabhupada did that. Prabhupada was in America, and the American preaching model was basically make people into full-time devotees. But when he came to India, nobody was interested in moving into the temple and becoming a full-time devotee at that time. Then Prabhupada created something new, life membership. So Prabhupada was dynamic. So whatever works, whatever connects people to Krishna, we need to do that. And rather than getting too caught in criticizing each other, we need to focus on just doing something constructive. And wherever we can connect and explain, that is good. But it's only through discussion based on the understanding the purpose. The purpose is to move forward on the path. And we have to discern whether the path is moving towards the left or towards the right. So when there are discussions in a respectful setting, then this can be resolved. Okay, thank you. Yes, Prabhu? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Thank you for a very insightful talk. My question is that what is the difference between the functional vision and transactional vision? I think you also talked about the transactional vision.
That's same. Okay,
and what if someone takes shelter of the transactional vision to enhance his spiritual vision? Let us say, for example, there is a student and he wants to wake up at the very crack of the dawn to perform his morning puja rituals or something like that. But he is not able to get up early to do that. And when he thinks that, let me just wake up for some study. And he wakes up very early in the morning and does his studies, and then he does his puja or something, rituals. So in that sense, he is having some transactional vision or functional vision. And then he's moving towards his either spiritual goal. So,
okay.
So again, he's taking shelter of the functional vision. But we have to transform or transcend.
If we are having a particular order, if we use it for functional purposes only and not for transactional transcending or elevating our consciousness, the two don't necessarily have to be contradictory. They can be complementary also. In the material, there is sattva, rajas and tamas. Goodness, passion and ignorance. So much of what is in goodness is very favorable for the practicing bhakti. Much of what is in ignorance is quite unfavorable for practicing bhakti. So, if the existing order is in ignorance, then it definitely has to be disrupted. If somebody's existing order is that, like, they are sleeping at 4 o'clock and waking up at 10 o'clock in the morning, well, that is not so healthy. Even from the material perspective, what is because spiritual perspective. But if somebody already had a habit of waking up early and then they were doing their studies, okay, you can study, but do something spiritual also. So we don't have to indiscriminately reject any particular order that we have. We have to use the expertly understand, okay, how much of this order can I use for my devotional purposes and which part I need to now put it aside and rise. So it doesn't have, sometimes the two can be contradictory, but quite often they can be complementary also. And if they are complementary, then that's very good. Because then practicing devotion is not that much of a disruption in our day-to-day life. It's more of a progression rather than a disruption. Okay, thank you. You had a question? Yeah, you can speak, I'll repeat. Okay, good question. Say somebody is not satisfied with their existing order, but when we cue to tell them about a higher order, they are not ready to accept that also. So what do you do? Yes. It's like, I was in America, in New York, so I had an old friend. I invited him to come for a program. So he said, a definite maybe. A definite maybe. That means, maybe I'll come, but a definite maybe. That's an oxymoron. You know, two opposite words you use together. So basically, some people, they are not satisfied with the way things are, but we offer them something higher. They're not ready to take that also. So it's actually very easy to point out what is wrong. But to accept what is right, that requires a leap of faith. And that is not so easy to take for most people. And because it is not so easy to take, it will require some, you could say, growing pain. That means if somebody rejected this order, but they don't want to rise to that order, then they will have to go through that chaos. And we can help them go through that chaos, but sometimes they may not just be ready to help. So we can always work with our best intentions. But we don't have to deliberately disrupt people's existing order. Sometimes, what can we do? We disrupt the order and they don't rise to a higher order. We give them both, but they rejected the lower level, but they didn't take the higher level. So then that is unfortunate. So this is something which we can try to avoid as much as possible, but ultimately people have to be intelligent enough to recognize that they need some order in their life. And if that order is not there, then the life will become completely chaotic. And complete chaos is something which one just can't sustain for very long. Sometimes if we just maintain a cordial relationship with them, then maybe when that chaos, they find it too unbearable, then they will come towards a higher order. So we can't control what choices people will make. But we can at least take the responsibility to make sure that they have a healthy choice available with them. See, we can only help the unable. We can't help the unwilling. The difference between the two. It's like, say, sometimes if we are driving a car and the car doesn't start, then maybe some people come along and they push the car from outside. And then we are steering the car from inside and the car starts moving. So it's cooperative endeavor. But suppose that person is inside the car and they say the car is not moving, and then we come and push the car from outside. but the person from inside has gone to sleep. Or they are pressing the brake from inside. Then the person from outside, why should they keep pushing, isn't it? So if somebody is unwilling, then we just maintain a cordial relationship with them and leave it at that. When they become willing, we can help. We have to know that we are limited beings. And as Prabhupada also in his Markine Bhagavad Dharma says, my dear Lord, tumara ichchaye sab hoy mayavash, tumara ichchaye nash mayara parash. That it is by your will that others can come out of illusion. So alankrita koribara khamata tomar. My dear Lord, please ornament my words so that they can become understandable to these people. So we can only do our part. Okay. So thank you very much. Kantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Itai Gaur Premanande.